Thank you all for allowing us to come tonight and to spend an evening with you and to share a little bit of our food. So 10 years ago, we were in many respects much the same position as you find yourselves this evening. We were at the beginning of a year. Most of us didn't know each other at all. We were seeking fellowship and encouragement. We were seeking the opportunity to grow deeper in our faith. And we were looking for authentic and accountable relationship. And I guarantee you, we didn't think that we would ever, 10 years on, be here doing this. But it's been a remarkable journey, and God has really blessed us in our friendship, and he has met those desires for us. And so that's why we're here this evening. We met through the C.S. Lewis Fellows Program, which is, if you're not familiar, it's a discipleship program of the C.S. Lewis Institute, which is actually just right down the road here. And the Fellows Program is designed really to engage both the heart and the mind and to equip people to articulate, live, and defend their faith. And it starts with a one-year program and with an option for a second year. And there's monthly reading, teaching, scripture memory, small group discussion, and personal mentoring. And after 2 years in the program, we decided, after much discussion, that we wanted to continue to meet monthly and to continue to build the friendship that we had developed over the course of that time. And so over the course of those meetings, we've grown a lot together as friends, as disciples, and we have experienced many changes, as you can imagine. For one thing, we were a whole lot younger 10 years ago. And we have also enjoyed a lot of good food. So the Fellows Program opens each year with a retreat at Wintergreen Resort, which is just outside Charlottesville. And prior to that, we had only met in our first year. We had only met one time, very briefly, during an orientation meeting. And so when it came time for the retreat, we traveled in different cars to Charlottesville, or out to Wintergreen. And I don't know if you've ever been out there, but you may know that it's in the mountains and you're winding around on a little road as you start to approach Wintergreen. And I was in the car with Lexi, who unfortunately isn't here tonight, and Julianne, and I think someone else. And we were nearing Wintergreen, and we kind of came around a bend, and we saw a sign that said Basic Necessities. And right down the hill was this little sort of shack of a store with several cars in it. And Lexi was like, whoop, we're going right in there. And we went right down into the parking lot. And we tumble out, and we go into this little store, which defined its basic necessities as bread, cheese, wine, and chocolate. And and we're inside. We go in, and we start our foraging. And who should we find in there but several other gals from a different car, but from our same group, who were in there loading up on all those same goodies. And I can remember thinking to myself, I am going to love these gals. These are like my people. And so really from that point forward, food and hospitality have been an integral part of our group and our experience.
And that's why the first chapter of the cookbook is named Basic Necessities.
Yeah, yeah. And so one of the authors, Randy Alcorn, who we've read his book Heaven, says, great conversation, storytelling, relationship building, and laughter often happen during mealtimes. And so that has really served as one way that our group has bonded. And that's kind of how we came to create a cookbook. When we meet every month, we always somehow end up with really great food. And there are only so many times that you can say, this is really great. We should do a cookbook. We should really do a cookbook, without actually doing it. So we decided to do it. And so we've done that, and we've enjoyed in the process really sharing a little bit about our story and sharing some of our food as well. And so what we thought might be helpful for you this evening, and what we'd like to do, is share a little bit more of that story and let all the ladies have an opportunity to do that. So Tyler's going to ask us some questions In the meantime, I will introduce, maybe I'll just let you say your name and
I'm Susie Vernalis. I have been in Washington for about 16 years. I work on Capitol Hill, and I'm happy to be with you all tonight.
I'm Blair Simmons. We raised our family in Fairfax County, close by. I have been basically a stay-at-home mom with a few forays into the job world, but mostly just a stay-at-home mom and church volunteer.
Not just.
I was just
going to
say,
and our esteemed mentor, I might add.
Many people's mentor.
And I'm Marlise, and I'm a working girl.
Okay. I'm Nancy Webster. I grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and was military wife and ended up here thinking it would be for 4 years, and it's been 35. Very glad to be with you all.
Hi, my name is Julianne Polonescu, and I'm originally from Mississippi, was raised Baptist. Been just retired 3 weeks ago from what seemed like a long career in the U.S. Foreign Service with the State Department, and so now I may actually have time to cook some of the recipes in the cookbook that I haven't tried. I'm hoping so anyway, and so I will pass this on.
Hi, I'm Allison King, and I'm a full-time mom of a 16 and 13-year-old. Pray for me.
I'm Jean Thume. I moved to Washington, D.C. when I was about 22, and then about 8 years ago, I moved overseas, but I'm now back again. You'll hear more about that later.
I know, here comes the confusing microphone situation, but we're going to have lots of chords. Okay, one little rule that we're going to have is try and have them, which you've done a great job of, we're going to record this. So if you can make sure you speak into the microphone, then we'll catch everything. Just as, yes, close. As well as, I know, it'll be hard. We'll try and keep a mic on each side. We have some great questions to ask, and again, we're so thankful to have you ladies here. The first question, what are some of the distinguishing characteristics of this group that you've been most meaningful to you? And Susie, are you going to start on that?
Thank you.
So most distinguishing characteristics of this group that have been most meaningful to you.
As Marlise said, when we met, we didn't know each other. We were married and single and divorced and widowed, and I don't think anyone had young children. Allison has since adopted some. So we started really, as we've said, we started with our stories of getting to know each other, and then we've done a lot of content together over the years. The first 2 years of the C.S. Lewis Fellows Program are a prescribed reading, mostly reading. You have a few lectures, a few audio things, and some face-to-face meetings, but it's quite a bit of reading. And so the thing I've really come to value over all the years now has been that these ladies and the few that are missing, we've read dozens and dozens of books together. And I'm an extrovert, so I love to read, but I love to talk about what I read. So I've got people that want to also talk about what we've read and how do we apply it. And in those years, now we've got this body of knowledge. You know, sometimes you read something and you mean to tell your friend and then you forget, and you forget where you read it. Well, one of us will remember. We don't all remember everything we've read, but you say, remember we read so-and-so, and that relates to what we read this year in this book. And sort of that's really been a value, is having read such a great amount, you know, like being a cohort, like a graduate school cohort where you've worked and read together, and we just keep adding to that list. After those first 2 years, we made our own book list. We go away together in the spring, and everybody brings ideas of books they want to read the next year. So we're not exactly a book club. We pray as well, and we've obviously done life together, but a big part of what we've done is the reading, and that's been really valuable.
How many books do you read a year?
I think about 5 or 6.
Really?
Right now, what happened was after the first 2 years and we finished the program, we wanted to keep meeting, but we said we knew if we just were a brunch group or just a coffee group, people would stop coming. We have plenty of those kinds of relationships in our lives. We needed something to keep us together. So in the years since, we've met about once a month, maybe sometimes taking the summer off. But we read one book in 1 month, and then the next month we have a social. We have a meal in someone's home or a restaurant. So it's about 5 or 6 books a year.
Does anyone else want to add what has been most meaningful to them about this group and your time together? Anybody?
Have our names on that?
This one's a free-for-all.
Oh, okay.
I would just add that, and to add on to what Susie said, I think what's been really valuable to me is all the different perspectives in this group. You've heard just as we've introduced ourselves, we come from a range of experiences, and we come from a wide variety of churches, and that has just been, it's really been great. It's really opened my world to think about things that I just wouldn't have thought of in different ways, and it's really, really been helpful to me. And I think that could be applicable to you just as moms in terms of, you know, how you're interacting. So
you've heard us talk a lot about that first weekend together. I think what struck me was how honest we all were with each other about our experience, our faith journey, where we were at that moment. I don't think if we wouldn't have all been that honest and open, we would have felt that companionship so quickly between us. And there's also a lot of grace in this group. We don't all read the book we're supposed to read. I'm just going to put that out there now. Enough of us do to have a conversation, but people are still invited back. No one ever got kicked out of the group. So it works, you know.
I'm going to jump sort of backward as we're getting into these. Can somebody describe one of your typical monthly meetings, or how a typical meeting flows and within the year? Nancy.
Well, on the months that we have a meeting, we have a specific office that we're allowed to meet in the C.S. Lewis Institute building on Braddock Road. And somehow, for some strange reason, we always have food. I mean, everybody just kind of opens their refrigerator that morning to see what they have, but we always manage to eat well, even at that kind of spur-of-the-moment thing. And we'll usually talk for a while and catch up on each other's lives, then we'll discuss the book, and then we will end up with prayer requests, and we pray for one another before we leave. So usually from 9 to 11:30. Sure. Once a year, one of our members who has a house at the bay, and we won't mention who it is, but she has us there for a weekend, usually in April of every year, and it's just a wonderful time. We arrive on Friday evening, usually have dinner in the first night, stay up way too late, sometimes drink a little bit more wine than we normally do, and then the next morning we will have our time usually from about 10 to 11, discussing books, what we want to read for the next year. And then in the afternoon, it's kind of just free time. Some of the people will just go for walks. Other people like to go and have a facial or a massage or something to just have a really good time away. And then we'll have dinner together that night. And usually we stay through about noon on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that I left out? Okay.
But also, it's important to have a friend with a fun house on the bay. Yeah. That helps. Look for that, ladies. Just kidding.
In the back of the cookbook, there's a picture of us there.
Oh, back of the cookbook. We'll have to look for that. Okay. Describe a significant change in your life during the past 10 years since you all have been meeting together, and how your involvement with this group has helped you during that change. And if Allison, you would start with that. So a change, that something significant that's happened and how this group has helped.
Okay, well, when we first started meeting 10 years ago, I was a 47-year-old single working professional who just started dating the man who's become my husband. So these dear sisters have walked with me through marriage, adoption of two boys from Russia, my retirement from the professional world, and my ongoing sanctification as a mother. And as you can imagine, I mean, all those big changes really shook my self-confidence. And as I was being humbled, God in his magnificence worked through these women to lift me up. So I really got in touch with what he promises in the Bible, that if we humble ourselves before the Lord, he will lift us up. And how he lifted me up was these women stood by me, fed me food, loved on me, prayed with me, prayed for me. And probably for me, most importantly, they kept reminding me that the most important identity that I have, that never changes and that I share with all these women and probably many of you in this room is I am a daughter of the one true King. And so I really applaud all of you for battling traffic and coming here and seeking out fellowship with one another, because I'm convinced that God works through fellowship. And I want to encourage you to continue to make the time, because it's hard to make the commitment, find someone to watch the kids, all that kind of thing, but to do it, because especially with people that have a commitment and really are seeking after Jesus, because it makes such a difference.
When you apply to the C.S. Lewis Fellows Program, you write something about how you're going to stay in D.C. and, you know, as a disciple of Christ who's been trained through this, make a difference. And I wrote something about how I was going to stay in D.C., but little did I know God would lead me the second year to apply to Wycliffe Bible Translators to go serve with them, using my finance and administrative skills to support Bible translation. So the second year of our program together, I applied, got accepted, went through training, raised a prayer and financial team to support me, and then went the August right after we finished our second year. And this group was a great support all along. They've prayed.
Where?
I went to Papua New Guinea.
Just around the corner.
As Nancy always said, where I knew nobody. which is an island above Australia, for those of you who don't know. And they have over 800 languages there. So Wycliffe has been there for 60 years. They've translated 200 of the languages. We're working in another 200, and there's still, you know, 300 to go. So it's the largest area that Wycliffe Bible Translators work. So I went there, and I was the chief financial officer there. And I originally just went for 2 years. Well, 2 years became 5, which became 8. And these guys, it was so nice when I came back on furlough just to jump back in and join the group again. They've sent me care packages full of all sorts of odds and ends. I was thinking this morning, one of my favorite things, which they don't know the story, somebody put in there, in one of them, this little like can of plastic colored fish and little turtles. And I thought, what? Like, was someone like cleaning out their attic and they sent it to the missionary, you know, overseas? Like, I was like, what do I do with this? Well, I just moved into a flat where the bathroom had a sink on one end and just a big flat space. So I just threw the fish all over that space just to kind of decorate it. And one of the beautiful things of working there is for $3, you could have a maid basically come to your house for a whole morning and clean your place. And it was one of those things you're encouraged to do because it supported the local community and it was a relationship and blah, blah. So greatest thing ever. So when I threw these fish out there, I told her, okay, these are all just decorations. You can just move them any way you want and then put them back the way you want. But it became a thing for the next 5 years that she would decorate with the fish in different ways every week. We never talked about it. You know, just she had a whole lot of fun with those little fish that they sent me. So now I'm back and then transitioning to a global job with Wycliffe. And like one of the folks in this group who isn't here tonight, she really felt God leading her to be my advocate. And she's going to work with the rest of the group, kind of setting up situations because I have to raise more financial support. So she's going to work with on my behalf with everybody else. And it just felt so nice to have somebody who, you know, was on my team with this and wanted to be a part with me. I really couldn't have done all this without all of them.
Does anyone else want to add anything? Hold on to the next one. In what ways has your involvement with your fellow women here and friends impacted your spiritual growth and why? And Blair, do you want to start with that?
I think the main thing for me is as different as we are in background, in what we do during the day, even political views, we are like-minded. So we're free to listen and learn. I just can't tell you how much I've learned from each one in this group, things that I never would have had an opportunity to know. And I have changed the way I look at things, my perspectives, my opinions. And I trust each one because of that like-minded. We have the same ultimate goal. So it's just a joy to hear what somebody else thought of a book that maybe I didn't get it. I didn't understand. I didn't really appreciate it. And then to hear and to realize. So it's been enormously broadening for me. I just underline what others have said. Just learning from different people and always, always knowing that we're here for one another. And like Allison said, I just so encourage you to continue. Even if it's difficult, you don't think you can make it, really, really press on. That's part of the C.S. Lewis program, is a commitment. It's about 50% learning Christian doctrine and background and theology, and about 50% relationships, because ours is a relational faith. And this group is a wonderful testimony to that, and just a real joy in my life.
Can anyone share on how one of your peers has maybe particularly challenged you spiritually or intellectually, or just a situation that comes to mind of where you've challenged one another? You have a microphone. You've got a microphone right on your table.
This falls into neither of the categories that you mentioned, but I will talk about a challenge. And it has to do with this cookbook. Okay, see? They know what I'm going to say. Okay, we all are so proud of the cookbook and so glad we did it. My mother is selling them throughout the state of Mississippi as we sit here. But I did not think it was going to ever come to pass. Marlise knew, she had a vision that this could happen, and we got there. And it was a challenge to me that we put this together in a timely way, and that we took care of all the details, that we pressed on, and we each sort of had a role, and we brought out talents I think we didn't even know we had until to call to do it. But it was having someone in the group have the idea, have the vision, and be able to communicate it to us all in a way that we could all get behind it. And I do think it was a bit of a challenge, because we're a fairly large group, and this is something we were all able to come together on, and that was something that took us to a whole new level, beyond just choosing our books and reading our books, or getting together once a month and cooking. This, I think, took our relationship and our mission to a higher level, so...
Yeah, I thought you might want to respond.
So I just want to say, this was not my vision. They view it as my vision, but really I was listening as they were always saying, we should do a cookbook. Well, we could put in quotes from the books we read. Well, we could tell a little bit about a story. Well, we could do this. Well, we could share about that, blah, 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 blah. And I was just racking all that up in my brain and thinking, yeah, we could do that. We could do that. We could put that together. Yeah, that's right. So that's how it really came to be. It's a collective vision that I just helped to sort of drive forward.
But in addition to, I mean, having a project was something we hadn't done. We'd met in homes and we'd studied together, but we hadn't worked on something together. So that really did challenge us in many ways. But from month to month and year to year, it is like what Blair said. We read books that challenged our points of view. We didn't always agree. We definitely didn't always see eye to eye. We're from all different denominations, so we've got that doctrinal background that we brought to it. So I think that's been, I forget the exact question, but that's been a way that we've been sharpened and challenged by what we've read, and as well the background that we've brought to it.
It's also very challenging to walk alongside Allison and Jean as they're totally changed their lives because of God's call. It's been enormously challenging. Okay, what is God's call on my life? Just watching these two unbelievable situations and walking alongside all these years. I just thank God for the opportunity.
And I should add, ladies, we'll probably have time for some Q&A at the end. So as you're sitting and listening and have any questions in the back of your head that you'd love to pose to them, if you want to jot those down or think about those and want to insert that. Anybody else want to share something? I have one of sharing a fun or meaningful story. It's sit on the fun part of it, or two about your experiences together. I think your name is on there.
Yeah, I think it is too. Which one did you want me to tell?
I have a story about it you like to share.
Let's start with that then.
So, lest you think that after 9.5 years you would know all about someone, let me disabuse you of that notion. So, Jean happened to be back from PNG about 15 months ago, and she had a milestone birthday, and we were out at the bay having a great time. We were celebrating. We had the flourless chocolate cake, which is in the cookbook, and salted caramel ice cream from Annapolis Ice Cream Company. And we were all sitting around at the table having a dance party. And somehow it comes out that Julianne is the lead singer in our rock band and has been for over 10 years. And we had no idea.
And are you going to be performing after?
And... and it's with her colleagues at the State Department. Oh. And we are all just sitting, I was sitting there looking at her, she was at my right, and I'm like, why haven't you told us this? How can I know you all this time?
I'm
and you're like,
that I told you now.
And she's like, and she's like, look, I'm on YouTube. And she pulls it up and there they are. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is just crazy. So, more reason to remain committed.
What's the name of the band?
It's called the Lost Agency Ramblers. It's a long story, but...
Okay, somebody write that down, Lost Agency Ramblers.
I sang with them this week.
Where, and when?
And you won't, because, you know...
Where do you sing?
We did it at the State Department. We do this one concert once a year. I don't know if any of you ever remember hearing about Daniel Pearl, who was a journalist that was killed right before September 11th in Pakistan. He himself was a musician. One of his housemates in college is a close friend of mine. She was in the Foreign Service. And when he died, she joined his parents she resigned her commission and helped to start his foundation. And one of the things that they ask is that once a year, people around the world do musical events to celebrate his belief and peace and justice and this kind of thing. And so we do a concert every year that the music is focused that way. So we did our concert on Monday.
It would have been nice if you'd invited us.
I'm not sure you could get clearance to come in, so I just didn't bother. But anyway.
I love that. Anybody else have any?
You know what?
That's a good one. I like that.
Do you want me to tell the one about, hey, Marlies, about Haskell?
You can talk about Haskell.
Okay. All right. My parents live in a small town in Mississippi, and their newspaper has a column that, until she passed away a couple years ago, was written by this sweet lady named Haskell Ray. And Haskell, who doesn't know how to edit herself, who writes just sort of stream of consciousness about everybody in her family and everything that happens, and it's just hilariously funny without her meaning for it to be. And so my mother, who thought they were very funny, not meaning that they were serious, would put them in a letter and send them to me on a regular basis. And so I would, you were driving, right, Allison? Yeah. Allison was driving one time. We were going to Wintergreen, and I had just gotten a big envelope, and so I'm reading them, and I thought Allison might have had a wreck because we were all laughing so hard. And so when Allison got married, we had a lot of really strange, funny things happen at the wedding and the night before when we were helping her to get ready. So I thought, I'm going to write a story about her wedding using Haskell's voice. And Haskell only has a certain number of adjectives in which she describes things. Things are nice, things are real nice. And there may be one other I remember. So I sort of wrote this thing saying, well, that was real nice, that was good, you know. And so that was what I wanted to give to Allison as her memory of her wedding, sort of the story in Haskell's voice. So we wanted to do something for Haskell in the cookbook, but it got too confusing. And besides the fact, my mother said if she sold any in her town, it would make it seem like we were making fun of Haskell. We didn't want to do that. So anyway.
Can any of you talk about some key factors that might attribute to your longevity as a group? Maybe Susie, you want to start? Why? Why has it worked? Why has it lasted? Why?
I'll talk.
So I think, first of all, commitment. You've heard us, that's kind of been a theme. You've heard us talk about that. I think that the fact that we had a place to meet, as you do every month, was really helpful for us. It's logistically, it cuts down on kind of the noise, and you can just, show up there. I think several of the gals have talked about traditions. So we kind of have a cadence to our year. We have the every other month thing going with the book, and then, the social. But then we have one of the gals who's not here tonight, Lexi, for until recently had a lovely sloping backyard with trees in the back and a little barbecue pit. And so in October, this month, we would typically go there and we'd have a little Oktoberfest and we'd sit around the fire until, the moon was, bright in the sky. And then in December, we usually have a nice holiday brunch. Nancy often hosts it and at her house. And then we go to the bay. And so that's just been helpful, I think, for us to get kind of get a rhythm. And the other thing that I would say, kind of going back to why we decided to continue meeting after 2 years in the Fellows Program, it's both substance and sustenance. So there's spiritual food, and these are substantive women who are really committed to growing deeper in their faith. And just that alone really challenges me and spurs me on to keep going. And then there's also just, and really challenges my mind. And then I think the other side of it is just the sustenance, which is just the nourishment for your heart, and also just all the great food. I mean, I think that's obviously been secondary, but hey, it helps on a Saturday morning. Anybody else want to add?
I think that there's a certain level of personal commitment as well. And I say that in a way, not in a spiritual or obligatory sense. It's sort of like when you have a family. If you've agreed to come to something that's a family gathering, you're more than likely going to pull yourself out and go. Tonight, for example, this afternoon, I call Marlise. I wasn't feeling well. And I said, Marlise, I think I'm just going to pass. Plenty of you will be there. And she said, you have to come because you are going to be holding the plums. You have to be here, at least be in the car. I don't think she could have left me out there once we got here, the plums at, and, But I am counting on you to hold that. And so I'm like, okay, I guess I will be there, And so there's a certain amount that there's just commitment. You've said, I will be part of this group, and you know how much you get out of it, so you don't want to not be there when you know what it means to all of us when we're all together. And so there's something of that, too, that maybe wasn't there necessarily the first 6 months or even the first year, even though I think we were committed pretty early. But after this many years, it's kind of, and my husband would be like, oh, okay, you're going with that group, And he's from Romania, so the whole thing is just foreign to him, the whole concept. And but it just becomes another extension of your life, your personal life, especially for many people who live here whose families aren't right here.
And I was going to ask, do you incorporate your spouses and your families? Have you done things as a bigger group or just kind of kept it to you women?
My husband
and your
is terrified.
We went on a White House tour one time.
Yes, you did take him on a White House tour. Have you seen him since? No, you have not.
But we've met in each other's homes, so we certainly know each other's spouses. When we meet at the C.S. Lewis Institute, Blair's husband Tom works there, and we meet in his office, and we all know him. We've been together with Allison and her family. Several of us are single, but we do know and spend time with the spouses a little bit.
My husband's an extreme introvert, so he doesn't really like anybody, so it's not,
And Susan and her husband, Susan's not here tonight, but she and her husband have had us over from time to time. As well, and Brian always joins us whenever we go. So,
and over all of these years, what is one thing that maybe has most surprised you about the group?
The rock band, for sure.
Anybody who's still here at 10 will.
I mean, really, I'm surprised that we're still meeting. Yeah. I mean, we've all made the commitment, but lives have changed. People are busy. Jobs have changed.
Well, several have moved away,
but several have come back, too.
Yes.
We've been meeting that long that people have left us and rejoined us. So, I mean, I'm just thrilled.
Stay in one place.
In a happy, yeah, a happy kind of surprise that we are continuing to meet all these years later.
I would say the same thing. I'm surprised that we're meeting together. And I think probably on a regular basis, the biggest surprise for me, I am not a morning person, and we meet on Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock. And I, you know, sometimes it's just like I got to drag myself out and think, okay, wake up, get there, go. But it's always worth it. Doesn't matter what the book is. It doesn't matter if we even talk about the book. It's always worth it. And that, I think, continues to surprise me, that God does something in that time that encourages me, that, you know, that helps me, that speaks to me, or just, you know, our prayer time, commitment to prayer. It's just, it's always worth it to me. And I think that's probably the most routine, regular surprise that I have.
That's the same with me. I just never thought it would keep going. Every year you think, well, probably after this year, people won't want to keep doing it, but yet we still do. So God is in the midst of it. Oh, we're going this way again.
I would just say, and I mentioned to someone who's here, we were talking earlier, I moved a lot when I was growing up, and so I never really had close friends from elementary school and high school that I still stay in touch with, and I've got a couple good friends from college, but I've been overseas for most of my adult life. And again, moving every year or two. And so for me, it's been wonderful to have a group of friends my age. And it's almost, and I don't have sisters, I have a brother. And it's almost like, in some ways, a set of sisters who, you know, that's just nice because I didn't really ever have that. And so, you know, and you get along with them kind of in some similar ways, but there's that tie that binds you. And so I think that's a surprise for me. I didn't think when I showed up that first weekend that that would be what would come out of it.
And just too, I think there's about a 12-year age span from the youngest to the oldest of us. So we're in different phases of our lives too, which is...
But we were a lot younger 10 years ago, yeah. All of us.
So I guess I would classify it more like a blessing instead of a surprise, but just how real God's word ends up being for me, being with these women. So just to build on what we've talked about, just the diversity that we have just gives me insight and really appreciate the body of Christ. And I really need these women because some of the books we read, I just find very difficult to understand. So it's
so considering you're looking out on a sea of women who our ages range probably from late 20s, early 30s, into the 50s plus, minus mentor moms. And what we share are having kids in elementary school, and we're running hither and thither all over the place with schedules, and we've made different choices in our schooling, and some people are working full-time and part-time and staying at home and public school and private school and homeschool. And we try to meet with imams every month. But beyond that, what kind of, I don't know, advice would you guys each kind of impart to our group of anything? And if you can, whether you don't have kids and haven't had kids in this stage of life, thinking of maybe the age or, I don't know, what kind of encouragement could you give us of continuing to meet together and find the time when life is so harried and crazy and busy and it's just hard to find the time to come as a group, to meet as a small group? I'm just curious if you can impart anything to us.
So it's kind of like exercise. You intend to do it every day, but you don't always. And the key is that if you miss a day, the next day you come back and you do it. And so I think, you know, things, as Julianne said, sometimes you don't get the book read. And that is one other surprise, that I read all of City of God. That's another surprise for me. 900
That was a sign that this cookbook could have been a hardcore project.
Anyway, yeah, we have scaled back. That was when we scaled back. But, you know, I think I would just encourage you really to stick with it. And another thing that, a theme that I think you've heard from us is just kind of authenticity. So, you know, we're pretty much free to be who we are in this group and to really share. And I think that's a draw. And so, you know, think about that as you're starting your year and, you know, and kind of how you can build that in to what you're doing going forward. Who else would like to
come? I'm not stretch it too far. This may come as a huge surprise to you, but men are very different than women. And I think despite having husbands and children, there's nobody that can take the place in your life as a close girlfriend and relations that you have with other women. There are things that you can share with them that you can't share even with your husbands. And I have been very blessed by having this group and other close friends go through a very serious trial in my life with me and hold me accountable. And I think it would have been easy to have at one point maybe fallen away a little bit, except that these sisters walked with me and kept me on the path. And I just would never be able to be where I am today with my faith if it hadn't been for my friends that walked along with me through the valleys.
I would just say, and I say this having never had children, so please take it with a huge grain of salt, and especially given the name of your group, I know you always want to share things about your children and the schools and things like that, and I know you will and do, but you have other friends too that you talk about that with. Make sure that you at least carve out enough time to talk about things of faith. Don't let the schools and the children dominate every conversation. Just a word of caution, because I know we try to do this a lot of times and we fall, you know, but and we do spend time talking about our personal life. We do our prayer list. Those are such important things for us, and we do it. But we don't let that usually take over our focus or our concentration when we're there, especially talking about what we've been reading. So that's just the only bit of advice. But like I said, having no children, just take that for what it's worth.
The other thing is, I know you have a mentor mom, and that is an enormous gift. And that's one of the things that a lot of people who come to the C.S. Lewis Fellows Program are looking for, is a mentor. And take full advantage of that. That's my advice to you. You know, I'm not sure what your construct is, but you have a lot of wisdom in somebody who's gone just a little bit further ahead down the path than you. So I would say take full advantage of that.
Does anybody have a question or two? We have a little bit of time if anybody had specific. Susan. Actually.
That's okay.
Yeah, I'll repeat it. I'll repeat. A question, if there's ever been conflict amongst you and how you got through it. Here's.
So when we were doing the cookbook.
I am just going to take my rock star self.
These ladies extended a lot of grace to me as I was hammering them regularly, asking for things, recipes and ideas and you know, needing to hit deadlines and all kinds of other things. And so I think it's been grace. They've been very, very gracious to me. I don't think we've had open warfare or anything like that, but I can assure you that I got on their nerves and they were very, very tired of hearing from me.
We were not tired of hearing from her because she was driving the bus that got the job done. I would say too, though, we haven't we haven't had much conflict because we haven't really worked in that way together. We meet for a few hours a month, and sometimes we'll see each other socially, and a few of us are at the same churches. But I think conflict comes like when you live with someone, you know, your husband or your roommates or your kids drive you crazy because they do this or that. We haven't had those kinds of relationships because we don't see each other all that often. Would that be true? Working on the book was one of the only times in 10 years was the first time we had deadlines and agreements to each other that we had to make.
Anybody else? Yes, Sonia. What's an idea of some of the books you've read?
So there's a list in the cookbook, a partial list in the back, because we do have quotes from some of the books in the cookbook. So I mentioned Randy Alcorn in Heaven. We've read quite a number of C.S. Lewis books, Mere Christianity, Surprised by Joy, Abolition of Man, Letters to Malcolm.
After you heard the thing about City of God, after that, we now have as a rule that whenever we have a list of books from which we're choosing for next year's reading list, it has the number of pages in parentheses on the side of it. Because, we kind of learned.
And it's not a thorough list, but there is a list in here. And one of our criteria when we've been selecting books is mostly to say, let's choose books to read together that you wouldn't read on your own. Oftentimes, sort of the easier books or the ones you know you're going to read anyway, we'll say, we like him or we like that author. We've read him before, but we'll probably read that. Let's choose the ones that we wouldn't read. And it really has pushed us all to read. We've read a lot of sort of theology and doctrine type books. I'm looking on our list. Pursuit of God by Tozer. We read Instruments in the Redeemer's Hands. We read A Praying Life by Paul Miller. We read George MacDonald, Gordon MacDonald, Tim Keller. We read several of his books. So there's a whole list of Dallas Willard. And we did try to do a bit of, reading current books and reading sort of ancient books. We've read missionary biographies and old sort of theology kind of books.
Anybody else? Yes, Debbie.
Does your group ever have it where you open up to more people, or in order for it to work, does it have to stay the group that we're seeing here?
Do you ever open it up to more people, or is the key that it's just you guys?
So our first year, actually, in the Fellows Program, all of us were there, and there was one gal who ended up moving to California after that, and we've lost touch with her. But when we went on to year two, we all went on together, and two others joined us, and one has stayed with us all this time in our subsequent meeting. So we have integrated some, but we haven't really opened it up beyond that.
I get this off.
Well, I'll start. I mean, one, I love to read. So to read all these books with other people and to talk about them, I think, and substantive things. I think, again, that's one of the benefits all along we've read. Things you wouldn't necessarily read on your own, but then to do them together and talk about them has been great. I think for me, just to grow in my faith with another group of people. I don't know if I knew this ahead of time, how nice it would be to be people around the same age, a lot of professional women, and to be with all women. It just ended up being a good thing, but I don't know if I knew that ahead of time.
Yeah, one of the nice things about the Institute is they know as disciples of Christ, you want to both develop your heart and your head. And so I came to Christ with my heart, and I had not read a lot of the books and the theology. And so what attracted me was that opportunity to do that with other women. And I don't know if it relates to the conflict thing, but I think one of the things that unites us, because we do take a moment each year to just check, do we want to keep going? Like, we don't want to just do it for doing its sake. But every time all the women here say no, we feel we are really growing in Christ, and that's our goal. So we feel like you know, the unity of Christ is really the kind of the glue that helps us. I think it may be a factor.
I remember I had never heard of the C.S. Lewis Institute, but that was one of the hardest times in my life when it was time to turn in that application. I had been diagnosed a couple years before that with multiple sclerosis. I had to leave the last embassy I served in overseas and came back to Washington. And at that time, I heard from the medical people at State that I would not be able to go back overseas. And here I had wanted to be in the Foreign Service since I was about 12 years old. I had taken the exam while I was still in undergrad. I passed. I got in. My career was going really well. And then I got sick. And I remember vividly just thinking, you know, what else, God, what else do you have for me? You know, this is not how this is supposed to work out. And I remember driving home from work, and I had the radio on, I guess it was on WAVA or something, and hearing only a snippet of an ad about the fellowship about the fellows program, and thinking it. And I thought to myself, if that is in the UK, obviously I can't do it. If it's in like Toledo, Ohio, I can't do it. But thinking, if it is in the DC area, I'm going to apply, feeling like that was what I was supposed to do. So I went home and I guess there was Google then. Googled C.S. Lewis Institute. If there wasn't, I found it somehow. And when I saw that it was in D.C. or in Northern Virginia, I thought, well, that's it. And I applied. And like I said, I'd never heard of the program. I didn't know anybody who had done the program. I had this idea that it would be really competitive to get in and didn't have any idea if I was going to get in. And was very happy when I did. But for me, that's what it was. I wasn't even thinking through sort of intellectually, oh, I want to read all these books, or I want to grow. I just felt like it was an answer to, what am I going to do if I'm not stuck here in D.C.? But, you know, the sort of idea of, I'm not doing what I thought I would be doing. And it was just sort of a bit of a time of mourning in a weird way. And this filled it in amazing ways. So
for me, we don't all have. For me, it was a matter, I just really wanted to grow in my faith and be more articulate when I would be witnessing to other people, because I always felt like I didn't know what to say and I didn't have the courage to step out in faith. And I just, that was one of the things that they said is, you know, that you do grow and learn to articulate your faith. And that was basically my primary reason for doing it.
I had actually just moved to Washington, you know, within the year prior, and was trying to connect in a small group, a church, and some other things. And I happened to be sort of borderline ill at the time. Went to a Ravi Zacharias conference, and my doctor, whom I'd seen that earlier that day, had said, "You can go." Because I said, "Look, I'm going to this thing. I'm not on bed rest. I'm just telling you." And she said, "Well, you can go, as long as you know, you're not talking to anybody and you're not doing things." So during the breaks, I read the brochure about the Fellows Program, and I thought, this sounds like the kind of group that I have been looking for. And I had about 5 days to apply, get my references, do everything I needed to do. But it was just a gift from the Lord, and it satisfied a desire in my heart to really go deeper with people who were, as Blair said earlier, like-minded. And I think, you know, I just, like Julianne, I just didn't realize how much I was going to get from doing that and from this experience, but it's been incredible.
There are brochures back there.
Yeah, there are brochures on the Fellows Program at Blair.
When I applied, one of my good girlfriends had done it the year before, and her group was so great and talked about it so much that I was very eager to do it. And I work in ministry, and for me, it was easy to make the decision to do it because it's like professional development that I wasn't getting anywhere else. And one of my colleagues said, "Why do you want to do that? Why don't you just go to seminary?" And I said, "I don't want to go to seminary. I don't want to spend that much time and money and commitment." But this was, you know, reading serious Christian works and discussing it with good people was likewise, as these ladies have said, exactly what I was looking for.